Bowl champions.
Of our great state of West Virginia, Governor Earl Ray Thomas.
From West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Beth Voorhees. Governor Tomlin is set to hold a news briefing from the state capitol. He'll be joined by representatives from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, as well as his state team that's been responding to the Elk River chemical spill and its aftermath. We'll take you live to the governor's reception room at the state capitol.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for coming this evening. I'd first like to thank our state partners who are joining us today. I think they're all, well, jumped the gun there a little bit. Let's wait till the rest of them get up here. Again, I'd like to introduce our state partners, our team, the Secretary of DEP, Randy Heffman. Raise your hand back here, Randy, wherever you're at. Stand up, Randy. The Secretary of DHHR, Karen Bowling. Dr. Letitia Tierney, the Commissioner of the Bureau of Public Health. General James Hoyer, the Adjutant General of the West Virginia National Guard. Jimmy Jeanette, Director of the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. We have with us in the crowd today nine county emergency management officers, the State Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Jim Ferris, and our county school superintendents. We have our local health officials, and I'd like to recognize our federal partners who have been with us every step of the way. First, I'd like to introduce Dr. Tanya Popovic. She's the director of the National Center for the Environmental Health with CDC. Dr. Ed Murray, director of the Division of Toxicology and Human Health Sciences. Bill Arguto, he's the chief chief of the EPA Drinking Water Branch. Sean Garvin, EPA Regional Administrator. Dennis Matlock, he's the EPA On-Scene Coordinator, and he's back here. And he's been on the site since the second day of this event. And finally, Mark Farrell, he's the West Virginia EPA liaison. Mike's here someplace. But like you in this room and all the 300,000 West Virginians, I am frustrated and angry. I share your concerns about the water crisis, as does my team here in West Virginia, the national experts we have depended upon for guidance, and the federal partners who are standing with me today. As your governor, I am committed to ensuring your health and safety. I do not take this commitment lightly. All of my efforts these past 3 weeks have been focused on protecting your health and safety. You have shared with me personally and through emails and letters your concerns and frustrations. And I've heard you, and I have been listening. My emergency response team, my public health team, our scientists, the National Guard, and our federal partners who are with me here today have been working day in and day out since January the 9th to fix this problem, to restore normalcy. We all have the same question: is my water really safe? This question is justifiable and cannot be ignored. I applaud the courage of those who have attended the public hearings and the town hall meetings. Your comments and concerns are appreciated, and I understand your frustrations and need for assurances and your call for action. You will hear in depth and from the experts about the water testing protocol we developed and implemented just hours after this crisis hit and have continued daily since that night. I value and trust the opinions of the experts standing with me and those who have assisted in our efforts. We are here to explain in thorough detail what we have accomplished during the past 3 weeks, where we stand now, and what actions we will take as we move forward. After receiving notice of the West Virginia Americans Do Not Use order on the evening of July the 9th and me declaring a state of emergency, our National Guard took immediate action working with the CDC and the EPA to develop testing protocols and procedures as well as water use and safety guidelines. We made hospitals, nursing homes, and long-term care facilities our number one priority to ensure critical care of our most at-risk residents. We tested all of our schools and provided additional water to keep our kids in the classroom and utilized federal resources to direct water to homes and businesses as needed. This event is most important, a public health issue, and is also an environmental and economic development issue. I am committed to creating and retaining good jobs in West Virginia. We must do this and have clean water and a healthy environment. It is not an either-or proposition. The science suggests the water is safe, and our efforts will continue as we keep testing. I've asked West Virginia American to continue testing throughout this its distribution system. This additional testing and the conclusions will continue to be posted online. We recognize that transparency promotes confidence. In addition, I have directed our Bureau of Public Health to continue testing the raw water and the finished water at the water plant for the foreseeable future. I also directed the Bureau of Public Health to certify that West Virginia American Water change its filters at the plant as quickly as possible. And we will continue our due diligence in making sure that that effort happens as quickly as it can. While the Bureau of Public Health requires testing of more than 60 contaminants within our drinking water system, I have directed West Virginia American Water to include MC, HM, and PPH to the list that they must test. And I expect West Virginia American to make available additional water to their customers who request it. It will be a month tomorrow since this chemical spill happened. And with everything that we have done and everything that we will continue to do, at the end of the day, all we want to know is our water safe? That we will not lose sight of that goal, keeping your water safe. The foremost scientists in their fields across the world and some that you will hear here today have advised that they do not anticipate any adverse health effects. Your concerns are understandable, and we will continue to address them head on. I'd now like to ask Dr. Tanya Popovic, the director of the National Center for Environmental Health, to give an update on their efforts here in the Mountain State. Dr. Popovic.
Thank you very much, Governor. It is a privilege and honor to be here, and I'm really glad to be here to meet a lot of colleagues in person with whom we have been working and supporting their work from day one, actually from hour one, because it was CDC who was called at 7:30 on Thursday evening to provide support in defining the screening levels for the MCHM. I and all of my colleagues who are working at CDC are absolutely aware of the concerns and the situation that you're in. And we appreciate that 300,000 people are having and have had daily challenges in deciding how to go about their lives. But I want to reassure you that what we do and what we did is exactly what we do every day for our living. We do care about the health and safety of all Americans, including you who belong in the group of 300,000 here in Charleston and West Virginia. Our mission is really to protect people, and that is something we do every day, and we're more than happy to step up and support the state of West Virginia. Let me tell you briefly what is it that we did and how we provided that support. So the first thing and the first activity was truly providing guidance how to define the screening levels of MCHM. At the time when that was done, there wasn't much scientific information available. There was some information available. Based on the information that was available to us, our scientific experts have taken a safety blanket of a factor of 1,000 to calculate how much, what levels in the water would be protective and not cause harm. And that 1,000 took into account information that was done on studies on animals and translating that information to studies on humans. It also took into account sensitivity of special populations, particularly vulnerable populations, such as pregnant women or people who have chronic conditions or other debilitating conditions. So that was another factor. The third factor of 10 was for the fact there was just limited amount of data. So 10 by 10 by 10 gives you 1,000. So by a factor of 1,000, we have identified the screening level of 1 ppm. I'm really pleased to let you know that we did not stop there, but immediately after that, there were very broad engagement of different partners, including EPA, NIH, National Library of Medicine, National Toxicology Program, who have put together an interagency working group that has looked at all the data that became available day by day. And again, they looked at everything that is available and came back with the same result and strongly supported our initial screening level and recommendations. One thing that I do want to say is that in that group, there was about 15 people who, amongst them, had about 200 years of experience in dealing with toxicology, not necessarily events like this, but dealing with toxic substances and toxicology. So this was a strong reaffirmation of the guidance and recommendations we provided. Since then, what we have done is we have provided support to the state of West Virginia basically on a 24/7 basis, not only by having our subject matter experts work with your leadership and with your experts, but also having the CDC senior leadership being engaged with the senior leadership here in the state. We have also sent a team of experts to conduct an epidemiologic study, which we call EpiAIDS, which are studies, in this case, that were intended to do a quick assessment of what health effects people are complaining about and coming to the emergency rooms. These colleagues worked closely with and supported your health officials here in state, who are the ones leading this effort, to identify what are the clinical symptoms that people are having. They are working on the analysis of their data, and the state health officials will have that available to you when that analysis is done. We have also worked in area of communication, trying to provide explanations of what it is that we did, when we did it, and how we did it. And I think one question that keeps coming up, and the governor just stated it and put it out there many times, is your water safe? What I can say is that with all the scientific evidence that we have, with everything that numerous people have worked on so far, I can say that you can use your water however you like. You can drink it, you can bathe in it, you can use it how you like. I would like to conclude with saying that we are here, the CDC team, to provide a visible physical support, but we have been here really from day one in very, very many ways, and we will continue to provide the kind of support we have been providing so far. I really appreciate the opportunity to meet with everybody in person, and we will continue developing actions and plans for any other activities that the state needs and that CDC can support. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Popovic. At this time, I would like to ask Sean Garvin. He's the regional director for EPA from Philadelphia to give us an update. Sean.
Thank you, Governor. Appreciate it. First, I want to assure everyone that EPA is on the job. We've been here since, been engaged since day one. On January 9th, we were informed of the spill and made quick decision to take a number of actions, including deploying two of our on-scene coordinators who are emergency responders to the site the very next day to be here in Charleston on the ground working to support the state, West Virginia American Water Company, and other responding agencies. EPA's job from day one has been one of support of the state of West Virginia, who has had the lead and still has the lead for this response. In addition to deploying the on-scene coordinators, we assigned EPA personnel during the first weekend to work at the FEMA Response Center on a 24-hour basis to gain around-the-clock information as the situation evolved. Also, EPA's drinking water experts have worked closely with other federal and state agencies in West Virginia as they developed their plan for getting drinking water system back online. Our role as a support agency has been steadfast and strong, and the state has communicated with us throughout the response. In cases of emergency response, federal agencies have a protocol we follow so that there's an orderly and effective approach to response and communications. In many cases, federal agencies are there to support state and local response efforts. That is the situation here. FEMA had the overall lead for the federal response activities initially, and EPA cooperated with them closely. This approach governed the early weeks of the response. But as noted, the state of West Virginia has the overall lead, and federal agencies have offered assistance daily on many technical and programmatic leads. EPA can confirm today that the spill site is stabilized. Work is underway to dismantle and empty all the tanks. West Virginia American Water Company sampling results remain at non-detect for lower parts per or at lower parts per billion levels. In other words, at orders of magnitude below the health risk levels recommended by CDC for MCHM and PPH. EPA remains committed to supporting the state as necessary to complete the cleanup of the spill and to ensure appropriate actions are taken to protect people's health. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. At this time, we'd be happy to take some questions from the media.
Is there going to be any movement to start testing the water inside people's homes? We've seen extensive testing done outside, but people are reporting odor, sickness. How do we know that the water that comes through the pipes is safe?
Well, once again, we'll go back to, you know, what the scientists have said, or the experts have said. You know, we will continue to rely upon the testing that's done out there, both at West Virginia American and around the affected area. At the testing at the 10 parts per billion. Right now, there are no plans to go into 100,000 customers' homes to take individual samples.
Governor, why not have the state go do some representative sample of those 100,000 homes to test and see if what some of the experts are saying about this material sticking inside of pipes is accurate?
Well, I think that, you know, that's one of those things that, Kim, we can could look at doing. We've taken several thousand samples already throughout the last 3 weeks, and, you know, we will continue to do that, and we will look at that.
Unless I heard wrong, I'm not convinced that the water is 100% safe. Is the water 100% safe to drink and bathe in? And are you currently and your administration drinking the water, sir?
We are, or at least I can speak for myself and my staff. We are using the water. I don't have any problem. I've been drinking the water for the last couple of weeks. And the only thing that we can rely upon is what the experts tell us. And you know, for all the tests done, and that's who we've got to depend upon. You know, that if the water continues at a no detect or that low level of less than 10 parts per billion, you know, we must assume that it is safe. But, you know, can I tell you it's 100%? No.
Governor Tomlin.
I wanted to ask you about schools. What can we tell parents about the safety of the schools, especially in light of the incidents this morning at Riverside and Midland Trail?
But if I may, let me call Superintendent Ferris up. He and General Hoyer have been on site there, and let him tell what's been.
Firstly, it's important that students and parents and teachers understand that our first priority is making sure that students are safe. And we were made earlier today that there was a odor detected at both Midland Trail and Riverside High School in Kanawha County. The administrators followed their protocol, released their students. Kanawha County received the okay. They had been doing flushing early in the morning. It started at 6 o'clock, and it had not finished whenever the first students arrived. As soon as they detected the odors, However, they sprang into action. Kanawha County had actually received the okay to flush the lines in their schools, not because of the MCH, but because of the discolorization of their water. There had been a water line break earlier in the week. During the end of the flushing process, students did begin to arrive and some complaints began to surface. Those complaints mostly were lightheadedness, burning eyes, burning nose were the symptoms. Those students, and there was one teacher who did faint in the classroom. Those students were immediately taken to the doctors at the health center located there at Riverside High School. One student was transported to a hospital, and the teacher, of course, was transported to a hospital. Two of the students, the issues weren't related to the odors. There was a cook at Midland Trail who we believe, and I have not confirmed yet, that was transported to a local hospital for diagnosis. The administrators are to be commended because they took immediate action. They did what they were supposed to do and followed their protocols. All the other students were released to their parents. We are flushing those two schools as we speak again this afternoon. They were tested earlier as non-detects, both at the 1 parts per million and then in a second test at 10 parts per billion. But the flushing that was done today was basically in relationship, and I know that most of you guys covered it. I saw it on your station about the water break that was in Bell and the lakes that were forming there. But as they were told to do, directed to do, they followed the protocols. They are working with health officials. We anticipate that the National Guard will either be in there this evening or be in there first thing in the morning to do the test. We will not put the students back into Riverside or Bell until the DTEC levels are all clear.
So was it a bad call to have that happening when students were arriving at school? I realize it started much earlier, but was that
I think they anticipated having it, having the flushing completed before they got there.
And how can we assure parents at other schools that something like this won't happen there?
Well, we're going to rely on the folks here. We're going to rely on, and I really need to bring this up because it seems like we've lost this. We got to trust each other, and that's what I've done through this whole process. Is I've trusted the direction from the governor's office. I've trusted direction that and the assistance that we've gotten from General Hoyer. I trust these folks that have stood here, and I don't understand everything they said. I'm a doctor, but I'm not that kind of doctor. I've trusted Dr. Gupta, I've trusted Walter Ivey, and I think Walter's here someplace, but that's who we rely on. But we know that when the odor was present that something was amiss, and we did what we're supposed to do.
So we're asking parents to put that same faith in the people that you're saying.
Yes.
How much worry is there of this being a problem long-term, down the road with long-term effects and symptoms?
At this point, based on what we know, it seems unlikely that there will be any long-term effects. And that is based on the fact that the exposures were short-term, that the information that we have about people who have come up and complained of different symptoms were generally mild, and that even those who were hospitalized were those patients who had underlying conditions. So, go ahead.
There were a few days in between the level of 1 ppm that you gave and then the different level for pregnant women. What do you tell pregnant women who maybe drank in between those days? Will you be monitoring them?
I think it's one thing that may not have been very clearly explained, and give me a second to try and explain it this time. And that is when the initial calculations and all subsequent calculations of the screening level were done, they took into account 10 factor of 10 as a protection for pregnant women and any other vulnerable population. I think that wasn't well known. However, when you do have a pregnant woman, and I'm a mother and a grandmother, and I know how it feels to have a pregnant woman in my family, there are certain precautions that some women will take. And our belief is that we want to support them in their natural inclination to actually be more careful. But the levels are really 1,000-fold more protective than those that were shown to cause harm.
Isn't that the levels you're talking about there for short-term exposures? How can the CDC even discuss long-term impacts when no one is testing in the homes to see what the longer-term exposure at those smaller levels is? Shouldn't somebody be testing in the homes?
We are not saying that there will be no. What I'm saying is that based on everything that we do know today, the experts agree that is not likely, that is very unlikely. And we have been meeting with your health state health officials, and we'll be working with them to support them in any activity that will include surveillance of the population in West Virginia so that any potential health effects that are shown can be identified.
But how are you going to know what those longer-term exposures at the lower levels are if you don't test the tap water in the homes?
We are looking from a health point of view because we know what the exposures were in the first few days, but then there was a do not use water recommendation in place. So I will turn it to the EPA colleagues to talk about why testing at homes or testing in different places is recommended or not, and how representative a sample of what has already been tested really is for the entire water system, because everybody is connected to the whole system.
Explain to us where in CDC calculations your experts took into account the inhalation risk when this stuff volatilizes in hot water when you take a shower.
The specific individual risks are grouped in three categories, as I said. One is the category of having the information of tests on animals. There are no studies on humans for this substance. So to use a safety protection level of 10 when translating the information how the substance affects animal, that 10 is a 10-fold protection for translation from animals to humans. Then, as I said, you take another 10 for specific populations, but then you take another 10 that actually covers for what you're asking, the lack of information on specific questions. Because if we had the data on every question, then that factor of 10 would be, it covers all these things. What we know is that the blanket of protection we have put of 1,000 is an extremely strong blanket of protection and would prevent any harm at the levels.
Would you agree that having data from tap water in the homes would be a helpful piece of data in understanding the situation?
I think that it is important to understand how the water system works. And I think it is the decision that is going to be made in the West Virginia to what extent that is something that is going to be helpful, that is going to be possible, that is going to be... At this point, I don't know whether it would be helpful because this is not the way that the concentrations and the screening levels may be in homes is not something that CDC is focusing on. We're focusing on health effects and protection of people. So I would like to defer that question to those who are experienced in measuring the water and looking at the representativeness of samples in the entire water system.
Again, Sean Garvin, EPA. What I can tell you is, as I said, it's state lead and states, you know, the ones who are putting together the protocols and working with the water company. But I can tell you what we look at under the Safe Drinking Water Act is the distribution system. The idea is if the levels in the distribution system are below the screening levels or whatever the pertinent health focus you're looking at the time, then if homes flush their systems appropriately and follow the guidelines, then there shouldn't be any issues in the home. So the Safe Drinking Act really looks at the system itself, and when we look at and when we provide support to the state, that's what we're looking at as a protocol that will address the distribution system, address the drinking water system, and then with appropriate flushing, the water coming into the homes will be appropriate water.
The levels in tap water in homes would not be a helpful piece of data to have.
What I'm saying is the Safe Drinking Water Act looks at the distribution system, and when looking at making sure that there's clean water, you focus on making sure the distribution system is below the screening levels, and then make sure and get information out to the citizens on how best to flush their system so that the water that they are getting is the water from the distribution system.
But at the same time, this morning, after a hearing, Dr. Tierney, the state health official, said if you smell water coming out of your shower that might smell funny, it might be a good idea to run it a little longer before you get in. And that's something that we had never heard before. At the same meeting, the local health official said, I'm not sure the water's safe. Why are we hearing different things from different officials?
Well, I can't answer to what Dr. Tierney said. She's here, and she certainly can address that. What I can tell you and what we look at is we look at the levels, and the levels that we have seen have been either non-detect or at very low parts per billion, which is magnitudes of order below the screening level that CDC has set.
Then why are kids passing out at schools?
Well, my understanding, and the folks from the school district were here, my understanding there were other issues that were going on in the school as well and not necessarily related to this, but they would have to be in the position to address that.
Yes. Here, to be clear, is, yes, the Safe Drinking Water Act looks at the distribution system, but after the water use ban was lifted and we're testing water in homes, in the river, in hotels, ourselves, we ourselves can smell it. Independent experts we've contracted with can smell the water. We've been told it's safe. Are you at any point going to look at the differentials in plumbing systems? We have copper pipe, we have lead pipe, we have polypropylene pipe, and science will tell us very clearly that different molecules bond to different things over different periods of time. And obviously, after the water use ban has been lifted, if we're still smelling the water in the way we are, and even recently people tell us they're still smelling the water, there's some amount of chemical somewhere, whether it's in the water or not, maybe at the source, no. But still somewhere in the plumbing system, it must be, must it not, if you can still smell it? Well, that's what we're all trying to get at.
No, it's a very appropriate question. And we look at things in terms of health levels. CDC has set a screening level. Doesn't mean there is potentially zero in there. It means it's below detect, it's below the level in which it has a adverse health impact. And subsequently, you may be in a position where you still have odors of something. It doesn't necessarily mean that your water is above a level that exceeds the health standard. And so continuing to be able to flush, continuing to making sure that you have flushed and done it appropriately is really what you need to do. Just because you have an odor doesn't necessarily mean that you have water that isn't good to use.
But if I may ask, you do not know that if you have not representatively sampled water inside homes with different types of plumbing systems. So how much water do we flush? If you still smell an odor in 2 weeks, do you just flush more?
I'm sorry, I didn't get to the second part of your question, which was the issue with regards to the piping. We feel that it's unlikely that this chemical is bonding to your piping, but we understand that issue has been raised. We are working with other technical experts to look at that further. But as I said, we feel that that's not a likely scenario based on this chemical.
You said EPA officials have been on site since about 2 days in. Do we have any idea how long that leaked?
Excuse me?
How long that chemical leaked into the before it even got to the river. Do we have any idea how long it was leaking?
There's an investigation underway, so I can't answer that question right now. There are a number of federal, state agencies and officials on site trying to determine that.
Are there still concerns about leaks? Anything else?
Right now, we feel that the site is stable. There are still folks on site who are addressing it. We still expect that there's probably chemicals in the ground. The process is it's even with the high waters yesterday, we did not see anything coming off the site. There has been booms, trenches, other things put into place, and that investigation is ongoing. We helped to comment on a remedial plan that the state has put together on this, along with other federal and state agencies. And so that activity continues.
Now, I know I've seen a lot of officials working out there by the water, and a lot of us do still smell that chemical. What I've been told, and I think what a lot of us have been told through this time, is it works like natural gas. Essentially, that chemical, that smell is added to it so that you know it's there. So if we can smell it, is it not there in what you guys are seeing right now?
I don't know if it's added to that. I think that's just the natural smell of the chemical.
Sure.
Could you explain, and maybe EPA could make available whatever peer-reviewed literature supports your statement that you don't believe it's bonding to the pipeline? Are there any actual studies? What science are you basing that statement on?
We're in the process. Bill, did you want to? And again, we have a lot of state folks here who have the lead on this, and we're providing support to them. But Bill, you want to just give a brief?
My name is Bill Argudo. I'm the Region 3 Drinking Water Branch Chief. We've been in discussions with American Water about this issue. There's been some studies done that actually the studies were done, I think, because from our Water Security Division, testing what would happen with an intentional release of a contaminant to a distribution system. And the goal of the study was to look at what types of chemicals would leave residuals or not. Now, I think what the study pointed to was that chemicals with low partition coefficients would most likely not adhere to piping. The two chemicals that are involved here, MCMH and PPH, have very low partition coefficients. So it's anticipated that it would not leave a residual, but it's an issue we need to look at.
Those studies look specifically at these chemicals?
No, they did not.
Would you post those on your website this afternoon so we can read them?
I don't know if I could do it this afternoon. I think I could probably provide information of where that study would be. But it's a question that we're going to look at. We've agreed to look at a summary of the issue that American Water is going to prepare to see if we can really either have a causal link to it or to be able to refute a causal link to that.
Do you think it would be helpful to have some sampling from inside the homes to help address that issue?
Well, as Sean said, I think to really determine it, we're looking at the distribution system. And the distribution system is the most representative water that the water company is delivering. And I think that's probably the most important issue here, is that the water being delivered is non-detects.
Could you speak to the issue of, Sean talked about the issue of the odor and health. Could you explain what the Safe Drinking Water Act says about secondary problems and aesthetics? Is our water supposed to smell bad? And if so, how long is it going to smell like this?
Well, there is secondary drinking water regulations. I'm not sure if the state has secondary drinking water regulations that they enforce, but there is a set that addresses odor and taste, but not addressing MCH and not those chemicals.
Is our water supposed to smell like black licorice?
Oh, no.
And how long is it going to smell like that?
I probably have to defer to somebody who has more knowledge, maybe CDC, on the odor issue with that chemical.
Governor, question for you. We've heard, with all due respect to everyone up there, many people deferring to other people. I understand there's a lot of agencies involved. There's a big issue in the community. There's no faith. There's no faith in the water. There's no faith in the system. Clearly, one of the issues is people would like their homes tested. They're worried about the pipes. If the state has the lead, you in particular are the boss here, can you tell the agencies to go out and make sure that this happens, that they test the homes so that people can get their faith back?
I'm not sure that I could tell you that we're going to go out and test 100,000 homes.
Not 100,000.
But I think, I don't have a problem in looking at testing samples. I noticed Channel 3 last night did their own independent test. As I recall, what I saw, they all came back, had no detect. So, it would be something that I'll be happy to consider as far as being able to do some samples.
Governor, I have a question for you as well. Is it, with making these decisions, is it true that the state hired a group named Matrix to help with this?
I believe that General Matrix was one of the testing labs.
Matrix was one of the testing labs that participated in the initial testing process at the one part per million and did some work for us analytically on the PPH testing. And then that was followed on in conjunction with work with the EPA and it was taken to other labs that had equipment that was more sophisticated to go down to the lower levels.
There were several labs who did the testing during this whole cycle.
So do they continue to help right now?
Right now, they are not one of the labs that it is continuing to test. There are three labs. There's the water company lab. There's a lab in Beaver, West Virginia, Reich Lab, and then the DHHR lab. Those are the three labs that are testing at the appropriate thresholds for the 10 parts per billion.
Okay, and did we rely on them for any kind of results in the beginning, before the CDC, before the EPA, anything like that?
I understand we didn't rely on a lab other than lab results from a GCMS piece of equipment and a lab analyst. What we used is the interagency team working together with review by EPA and CDC of the method that was used, and that method was used across several labs, and then it was cross-checked across multiple labs to ensure there's an EPA standard for a 40% redundancy related to certain testing, and that's the protocol that we use to sample within the 10 parts per billion across the system. And as it relates to the school question that came up earlier, we have tested 108 schools, and we came up at the non-detect level of 10 parts per billion. As it relates to this particular school incidence today and the line break, I can't tell you anything other than we're going to go back out and retest those two schools after it's been flushed.
So in your opinion, would you say, may I ask one more question, please? In your opinion, would you say that although the company on the board has former chemical company CEOs, chemical alliance zone lawyers, all of these people on there, that it was still an unbiased look at what we needed
to
do?
We're using a standard that's an EPA standard for a test methodology. We're using equipment across the system, and we're cross-checking it at multiple labs. And Jim Hoyer, in doing that in a state of emergency, is not looking to see if there's a CEO on a board. I'm looking to take care of my responsibility for public health in the state of West Virginia.
Yes, sir. Go
ahead. Governor, we just had the superintendent say that there was flushing down at two schools this morning. Now, whatever the reason, whether it was colored water or MCHM related, after that happened, we had smells of licorice. We had complaints of eye irritation and nausea, lightheadedness. We had a cook go to the hospital. We had a teacher faint. So how do we countenance that with the fact that the CDC is right here saying the water is safe? Like, that doesn't sound safe to me. I don't understand how those two facts mesh.
Doctor.
There is a difference between safe and ability to talk about a specific substance, which is MCHM. So what I said is that based on the evidence that we have about MCHM and all the calculations and analysis that have been done, the screening levels that we recommended and that have been confirmed are the ones that would allow people to use the water without harm from MCHM.
What do you say to people who have flushed their home multiple times and are still experiencing the symptoms of burning, the skin irritation, throat irritation?
I don't understand. Is there something else that's making the water smell like licorice then, other than MCHM? Because from all reports I heard, the water at these two schools smelled like licorice this morning, and then we had these health issues.
I think there is also a little bit of confusion about the level at which the smell shows up and the level that is considered to be protective, meaning no harm is going to happen.
Go ahead. Harm with reports of eye irritation, lightheadedness, fainting, and a cook going to the hospital.
We are providing the recommendation about 1 ppm, again, based on everything that we know. State is right now, your state health officials are conducting analysis of the data, and they will continue to survey anybody who has any symptoms that could potentially be associated. But it's very hard for me to say now that these symptoms are associated with MCHM when the levels are non-detectable and below the screening levels.
These levels keep popping up again and again. It's been 4 weeks since this all happened. Why are we seeing pockets of this pop up here and there when people have flushed and flushed and flushed?
Those are technical questions, and I'm going to turn it to Ed Murray, who is right here. And the reason is, in very lay terms, that people's homes and people's water systems are not exactly clean, sterile glass tubes, that nothing stops everywhere or moves anywhere. But it is an integral system as a whole. So when we measure the levels at the moment when they enter, let's say, a neighborhood, and there is no detectable level there, that water that is going into the house is actually at the non-detectable level. So,
aren't you making the argument for testing homes?
I am not making the argument for testing homes. I think that that really decision needs to be made with a little bit more thinking and deciding what kind of data we are going to have, what validity we are going to have. One of the things that we all have to do is be very honest about what we do know, what we do not know, and not promise to do things where expectations of outcomes and results are such that we just don't know whether we can do it. So I don't think anybody here is saying we're not hearing you. We hear you loud and clear. But the No. I think that what we need to do is we need to have a level of trust in which what we know is shared with you, but you also have to know that there are limits to what can be done. And conducting studies without having the knowledge that there will be a statistical power, that there will be an ability to make a conclusion, is not advisable. So this is suggestions and comments that you are making. You know, we're hearing them. And
we'll take one more question here, and then we're going to break out, and you can ask individual questions.
Governor, why have the federal officials that are out here right now not been out here earlier? Why did it take 4 weeks?
The federal officials have been here from day one. I think that maybe that is something that we could do more of and in the future, but this is really not a single visit. This is the visit to make us physically visible because there are literally hundreds of people in our partner agencies, in my agencies, who are working around the clock on this issue. Just because you don't see them, it doesn't mean they're not here. So we are really here to tell a little bit more in person about what it is that our agencies have done in support of your state. But we, as agencies, have been here almost from hour one.
We want more visibility and more speech with you. We want to talk to you guys more often because the residents have no faith. Again, guys, they really don't.
Well, and if I can just answer the question, we do this all the time, and we have basically an incident command structure in which we work into, and when we don't have the lead, we work with those on the ground who have the lead for the messaging, so there isn't hundreds of different messaging. And so we've provided individual conversations with media outlets who have asked for direct information related to our role, but we try to work in that structure. We're here today behind the podium because the governor asked us to join you all so that we could talk about the roles that we each have, but generally we try to work within that incident command structure, which is why you haven't seen us standing behind the podium before today.
Thank you all. They will take individual questions from the press.